Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing visualization and imagery, and specifically how this skill can be applied to decision-making. And, you know, I think whether it's in tennis or other sports, a lot of athletes struggle with really making their decision-making be a little bit more automatic at times, be able to make faster decisions more consistently in terms of the, you know, in terms of acting in ways that they want to, you know, making split second decisions, both accurately and, you know, in more of a planned out way. And I think that visualization, which is also referred to as imagery, and we can, you know, talk about that sort of from a research perspective, I think it's often thought of as imagery, which is, you know, really more the interactive experience where we're really trying to put ourselves in that moment and make it feel more vivid through getting these, you know, different senses and emotions involved. And we can talk more about that, how, you know, using those details can make it feel more like you're actually in that moment. But how we can use this skill of visualization or imagery in order to, you know, really make the experience feel more real, but also to really put ourselves in that moment so that, you know, we can plan out our response to a certain situation before it happens. And then hopefully when we're actually in that situation, we have the response planned out. It feels as if we have practiced it many times through our repetitions, you know, by practicing the visualization. And then in the moment, hopefully we can have better and better decision making.
I think to be a little bit basic with the visualization and imagery, Josh, we can look at it on a continuum of it can just be as spontaneous as sort of daydreaming about your sport. And it can go all the way to being scripted where you write it out in a paragraph or more. And then there's a lot of stuff in between. I think it's always good to have some level of planning to it, but it could be as simple as you walking down a sidewalk or a hallway and you're just thinking about your forehand. And you might even be using your, you know, your right or left arm to shadow the forehand as you're thinking about it. And what's that doing? Even though it's short, it's still strengthening what, you know, your skill around the forehand. That might even be helping you to enjoy the forehand more just by seeing it in your mind more, feeling it a little bit more. And so when we talk about some of the things today, I think you'll want to write out some of what you would like to see from a decision-making perspective. But it can go from simple bullet points all the way to a script. I have tended to go more toward the bullet point approach of late, but I've also used scripts in the past. And sometimes the great thing about scripts is you can read them and record them. So, you know, we're going to kind of run the gamut here of what exactly visualization and imagery practice looks like. But I think it can be, as you said, Josh, a great tool to use to try to make decision-making more automatic in situations and in positions on the court. It may not be what you do 100% of the time, but it's probably a good 80 to 90% this is what I want to do here. And the more automatic you can be about that, the better. So I think that's a good place for us to start looking at this.
Absolutely. And yeah, and I have tended to go more in the on the script side of things with athletes that I've worked with, in terms of, you know, picking a situation that, you know, maybe it's a great situation where you're, you know, being successful, you're winning, maybe you're playing great, and everything's going smoothly, and, you know, and visualizing that sort of a situation. Or maybe it's a more challenging situation where you're losing, or where things aren't going so well, and maybe you're not playing your best, and maybe you're feeling frustrated. And picking a situation like that and really trying to help an athlete visualize and sort of plan out their response in that sort of a moment, where let's say I'm down a break and I'm upset about how I've been playing. I'm feeling, you know, nervous about losing the match, and start to think ahead towards, you know, my results and the impact and consequences of losing this match. Can I plan out how I want to respond in a moment like that? Because that could happen. That could happen to anybody, first of all. But once we're in the moment like that, can I choose how I want to respond? Okay, maybe I want to really connect to my self-talk in that moment, and I want to plan out certain things that I want to say to myself. Maybe I recognize that I have certain tension in my body, physical tension, and I want to use my breathing and use some progressive muscle relaxation in order to release some of that tension. You know, maybe I recognize that it's my decision-making in terms of my shot selection that is impacting things, and I want to make an adjustment there. So I think by, you know, putting ourselves in that moment, maybe a challenging moment where things aren't going so well, planning out our response, and then, you know, in the script, actually seeing that change take place, and, you know, and then really trying to connect to those details in terms of the different senses, you know, okay, what is the, you know, what am I seeing? But okay, can I hear the sound of the ball? Can I smell the smell of the freshly cut grass nearby outside of the court? What are the emotions? You know, what emotions do I feel when things aren't going so well? Maybe there's nervousness or anxiety. Maybe there's a lack of self-belief. You know, maybe there's, maybe I connect to some of the thoughts that I'm having in terms of, you know, my UTR is going to go down, or I'm, you know, I can't believe I'm going to, you know, lose in this round of the tournament. And then once things start to turn around, can I also connect to those emotions? Can I connect to maybe that self-talk? And can I really try to include as many of these details to make it feel as much as possible like I'm actually in that moment, and try to make it, you know, a little bit more immersive and vivid? And I think what's nice about it here is we can also be, you know, it allows people to be creative. It allows people to be creative because you can choose what happens in the situation. You can choose the end of the story, which is pretty cool. So again, it could be more of just a overall positive situation. It could be more of a challenging, difficult situation. It could be something otherwise, right? Michael Phelps, you know, one of the greatest, greatest Olympians, certainly greatest athletes, most decorated athletes, has talked about how he would visualize three main things. And I know, I think we've talked about this in the past, but he would visualize what he wanted to happen. He'd visualize what he wanted to avoid or what he didn't want to happen. Then he'd visualize anything that could happen. So that when he's actually in the situation and he's in one of those three, you know, one of those three situations in terms of something that he really wants to happen, something that he really doesn't want, or otherwise, that he feels like he's been in that moment over and over again, because not only has he done the work setting up the visualization in the first place, whether that's more structured like a script, whether that's less structured, but he's practiced it. He's gotten those repetitions and he's been consistent about practicing it. So then when he's in the moment, it's as if he's been in it in that moment, whatever the moment is, it feels like he's been in that moment many times in the past.
So if people listening want to write a script, here are some sections that I would suggest, you know, creating, right? Because if we kind of build out like a taxonomy of what a script would look like, you know, I think the first thing you want to do is set the scene. What's the setting? And it might be you describing where you're playing, the club, etc. Next part of the story should be the situation. So that could be the match situation. It could be it's a first round. It could be it's I'm up 5-2 or I'm down a break, right? Describe that. What the next section would be what you do in this situation. You know, how you respond to it, Josh, like basically what you were saying. And you could also, if you wanted to, like you were saying with Michael Phelps, you could insert an obstacle part here and then describe the obstacle and then describe your kind of intervention or response to the obstacle. And then you can finish up with the outcome. So that's a nice, easy way. You know, some of these are more optional, right? Obstacle and intervention you could take out if you wanted to do a fully positive script, but setting, situation, what you do in the situation, and then the outcome. And those are just great ways to section out your script or story that then you can then repeat it, right? Maybe another situation comes up later in the match, et cetera, right? Or you have other types of ones. And you can just use this very basic organizational structure to help you. And you'll certainly then be able to respond to these situations or settings a little bit better because you would have practiced them in your own mind. And you know, I think you probably have a lot of examples, Josh, of people who have done this well and you know, had success with it. And so it's certainly a proven strategy at the elite level. And certainly something everybody can tap into, just using your own mind and imagination and the ability to form images to start to practice something that you want to get better at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think sometimes when people are getting started with it, it can be a challenge, especially if it's a brand new skill, you know, trying it for the first time, trying to, you know, close your eyes and really try to put yourself in that moment through, you know, some of these details, I think it can be a real challenge. And you know, some people have an easier time as they're getting started with it. It just kind of depends. But I think, yeah, it's important to recognize also that there is a lot of research around visualization and the impact of it. And also, like any skill, it is something that you improve on over time. And I think consistency is, you know, when it comes to a skill like this is really important. And I think, you know, if there are ways where people can think about practicing this skill and maybe adding it or stacking it with an existing skill can be really important. I mean, in terms of a script, maybe if it's about a paragraph long, that might take somebody a minute and a half or 2 minutes to read through it. And then what they can do is they can record it. On the iPhone, there's an app called Voice Memos where you can record your own voice and then listen back to it. Listen back to yourself walking through that story, that script, and you can listen to it and really try to put yourself in that moment. And again, I think we all have 2 minutes a day. Sometimes people will say, oh, I didn't have the time. It's like, okay, well, it is a minute and a half or 2 minutes or however long it ends up being. So it's, you know, how can we make the time and how can we remember to do it or put systems in place so that we don't have to rely on our memory, whether that's an alarm or it's on our calendar or we're doing it with a pre-existing routine that's already taking place. I think relating to our topic for today, you know, visualization for decision-making, I think we can use something like a script, but I think we can also, you know, really focus on sort of more of the micro here, where we can really think about certain situations that we're likely to be in. Maybe it's big points, you know, maybe it's a deuce point, we're playing no ad or whatever it is. And can we visualize and really get those reps in for specific decisions that we're likely to have to make over and over again? For instance, maybe it's a second serve. Okay, where do I want to hit the second serve? Can we simplify it? Okay, every second serve is going to their back. Or on a big point, you know, what is a pattern that I want to set up? Maybe I want to set up my serve plus one. Maybe I like to, you know, hit my kick serve and try to set up my forehand. And can I just keep it simple like that? Maybe I want to serve in volley and I want to use a certain serve to do that. Maybe on a second serve, I'm trying to really, you know, move my feet so that I can run around my backhand to hit a forehand and then and attack my, you know, my opponent's second serve and maybe follow it into the net or something of that nature. So can we just, you know, can we keep it simple? Can we have a clear plan for how we want to handle certain situations? And really try to put ourselves in that moment through some of these same tools, through visualization, through, you know, really trying to make the situation feel as realistic as possible. And I think sometimes the name itself, visualization, almost leads people astray in a certain way where they hear that word and they hear the word visual and they think it's almost like just playing a movie in their head, which is why I think it's really important that we, just as we've mentioned, connect to those different senses, connect to those different emotions, really try to use those details to make it feel like we're actually in that moment. And actually we can think of it more like mental rehearsal, or that we're mentally, you know, rehearsing the situation, making that situation feel like we're actually in it, rather than just I'm watching a movie of the situation in my head.
I think that's why it's also important to be planning it out, whether you are doing it through bullet points or a script, that the emotional aspect of it is included, because you want to experience playing with confidence. You want to experience perhaps also noticing your tension relaxation state in your body, having some awareness of that. You want to notice perhaps your enjoyment / excitement level, whatever that is for you. It's different for everyone. And, you know, maybe just the energy level. And so all of that should be included, and you should be trying to feel that. I like to also think of this, Josh, maybe even more generically, not necessarily just in situations, but just in playing good points. What does that look like? So if we go back to, say, our episode on decision-making, where we talked about three basic rules, just see yourself playing by your rules. Just when you move to your right, see yourself hitting it to the left. Moving to your left, hitting it to the right, whether that's with a backhand or an inside-out forehand on either side. If you get a shorter ball, see yourself being aggressive. And maybe you're going cross, maybe you're going down the line. But just try to see this more and more, so that when you're on the court, at a certain point in time, having practiced this in your mind enough, these movements and these decisions will simply become automatic. You'll just simply notice that you're moving to your right and hitting it to your left, and you didn't even need to think about it. So even bringing it to that level of generic good play and good decision-making will be very, very helpful. I think as a part of that, you may even want to see the trajectory of the ball that you're hitting. So if you are moving to your right and hitting it to your left, you know, be cognizant of the angle that you're trying to create. Maybe the angle is simply back to the middle. Maybe it's back to the other corner. But just be aware of some of the ones that you're trying to hit, because you're in with those rules, you're keeping in mind that we're trying to do something high percentage. We're hitting it over a lower part of the net, and we're using angle to hit to a longer space, right? So we can hit a little bit more length on that ball. You could also visualize simply seeing the ball better, noticing that you're tracking the ball right off the opponent's racket. And then after the bounce, you're noticing the spin of the ball all the way to your racket, or as much as possible. And so that can be helpful again, so you begin to tune in more when you're actually on the court. So we've been talking about doing this, Josh, for maybe 1.5, 2 minutes. That kind of practice reminds me of David Sammel in his episode with us, talking about short and sharp, and how what they found was when they were doing technical work, they found that doing it in short bursts and very sharp and focused consistently worked better than longer periods of time. And yeah, I had a nice conversation with a Division I tennis coach last week, and she was telling me how something similar with swinging volleys, How they began to just include that as part of their warm-up process. So they would do swing volleys 2 to 3 minutes every single day, as opposed to working on it once a week or once every couple of weeks, and that there was a lot of value there. So consistency and just being short and sharp with this doesn't need to be deep dives at all, but the consistency of doing it day after day after day, and like you said, Josh, whether you're anchoring this or stacking this with something else, figure that out. What does that look like? But even just doing some informal work here, as long as it's consistent over time, you will definitely see an impact on your play on the court and your ability to make more automatic decisions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, yeah, keeping it short, keeping it simple, not feeling the need to overcomplicate it. I think you brought up some really great things that people can choose to include in their visualizations or choose to focus on as well, in terms of the path of the ball, in terms of watching the ball. I think, you know, another good thing that people can think about is their footwork. We've talked about footwork being one of the controllable pieces, and maybe in certain ways related to effort. But can we visualize the way that we're moving our feet and how does that feel? Can we visualize maybe the sounds of that and how moving our feet the way that we want to sets us up to hit each shot the way that, you know, that we want to, how our footwork can really set up our ground strokes, for instance, so that we're better positioned and, yeah, we're not late on the ball and we can, you know, catch the ball in front of us and things of that nature. So I think that can really make a big difference too. And I think that can be one of those details that we want to include.
I think the overall goal here is to essentially program your mind to hit the shots you want to hit in various situations and in various positions on the court, so that you're not having to make these decisions right on the fly, you know, extemporaneously. And the more you understand that, the better. But we'll also realize that the stress of certain match situations may threaten this programming. You might feel like I got to do more. And just be aware that those emotions may come up in pressure situations. And very often that thought of I have to do more or I've got to change something now is not necessarily the right thought. It's often a reaction to the stress and pressure of a situation. And you want to go back and trust a lot of this programming, decision-making that you've been working on in your visualization to work for you. And hopefully, if this is a stressful situation, you have a visualization script or plan for it that you can go to. But just be aware that stress tends to break the patterns and programming that we've tried to establish as being what we want to do. I've heard many stories of players getting into winning situations and then feeling like they have to do more. Or even if it's a losing situation, feeling like they have to do more as opposed to simply being better at what they do. And so, the more aware we are of stress and how it can affect decision-making, the more you can start to build that into your visualization exercises so that you're prepared well for that and you know what your best game looks like and how to go to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think not feeling the need to overcomplicate it, not changing things unnecessarily, right? If you're in a winning position, you know, I think sometimes once the finish line is in sight, people can start maybe feeling the need to change things. Or as we've talked about in the past, maybe if things aren't going well, players at times will look to make adjustments or look to change things maybe a little bit too soon. And I think what really that boils down to a lack of trust. I think when players don't trust their game, they don't have that self-belief in themselves or in their game, then they look to make changes maybe faster than they need to. So I think, you know, we can actually use this skill of visualization and imagery as a way to build that trust in ourselves, because we're literally seeing ourselves and experiencing ourselves executing the action repeatedly, you know, rather than it just being something that, you know, maybe I've done it in the past, maybe I've closed out a match in the past, you know, maybe I've played this more aggressive playing style I'm going for in the past, you know, maybe that's happened, you know, a couple times. Instead, I'm literally experiencing myself doing that repeatedly, and it reinforces that this is the way I want to be playing, and that this is, you know, a situation I've been in time and time again.
Yeah, and so I think you know, if people can take anything away from this today, it's, you know, to use this skill as a means of improving what you do on the court, and decision making is a big part of performance. This is not an overwhelming thing to do. You can keep it short and sharp. The idea is to do it consistently and, you know, maybe connect it to something that you're already doing, and try to include more than what you see. Include your emotions, include your confidence, your excitement level, your enjoyment level, all of those things. As you said, footwork, great one, Josh, watching the ball. Just try to be, you know, as inclusive of some of those details as possible, and let it play out for, you know, a period of time, a few weeks, couple months. I can, you know, speak from personal experience that this is very helpful. And one of the things we haven't mentioned yet that it helped me with, Josh, was getting over some inhibitions with hitting certain shots. You know, some of us who are a little bit more risk averse at times may hang back. And it was helpful for me to visualize and imagine myself attacking more and coming to net more, so that when I saw short balls, it was automatic that I was going. It wasn't a should I or shouldn't I conversation like it used to be on the court. It became more like, oh, there's that ball, I go. And, you know, if the players are having struggles with anything like that, you can kind of set up like, here's the decision I want to make. And when I get this ball, I go and do it. And it can happen for you. So I think this is very powerful for players. And I hope that people can start to use this a little bit more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I could even see, and I think sometimes it can be helpful when players set up visualizations where maybe it is that short ball that they're trying to work on. And maybe they actually visualize a situation where they're in a match and there's a short ball, and maybe they don't attack it the way that they want to. They don't get in and come up to net on it. They hang back. And then maybe they remind themselves, hey, I'm trying to get into net. And then they see themselves executing that action the way that they are intending. Or maybe, you know, the first time around it doesn't go so well, and maybe they try and, you know, they miss the shot, or they get passed at the net because they didn't get up there fast enough. And the next time around, and the next time around, they execute it. So I think there's, again, I think you can be creative with how you put this into place, as long as there are certain guidelines around it, like some of the things that we discussed. But yeah, I think we want to be both seeing ourselves executing just the way that we want it to happen, but also executing when there's been some resistance, or when there's been some turbulence, when certain things haven't gone so smoothly, but we're still, you know, we're planning out how we want to behave despite that.
So I hope everybody gives this a try. I think it's a super useful part of your training. And yeah, if you have feedback for us, you can obviously get in touch. So, well, that's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh about anything in particular, this episode, or general feedback, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss on the show, please rate and review the podcast so other tennis enthusiasts can find it more easily. Additionally, to be notified of new episodes, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.